Wow, that was delightful. We should just listen to that all afternoon. That was really, really enjoyable. Thank you, ladies, for putting that together. That was quite enjoyable. Happy Sabbath to all of you. It's good to be here. It's hard to believe we're only a week from keeping full holy days, isn't it? It's going to be great as we look forward to that time. So hopefully your preparations are still going forward as we look forward to the Feast of Tabernacles. But next week we'll be starting the first of the seventh month. So that's exciting as we count down to that. Well, how many of you have ever been in a situation where you had no idea what to do? I'm not asking for hands, but I see a few going up. I think we all probably could appreciate that, right? You can't think of a solution, and what happens? You're stressed. Blood pressure might go up. Maybe if you check your sugars like me, your sugars go up because stress triggers those things. And you may even feel totally alone, because God might seem distant. In fact, maybe you're not even sure God's aware of your plight. And you might even question, is God with you? Well, we have a story about that. Let's go back to 2 Kings chapter 6, one of the amazing stories from Scripture of a person who experienced that. 2 Kings chapter 6. It was Elisha's servant. Now, we're not sure if this was Gehazi or not, because the previous chapter, remember, he gets leprosy because he got a little greedy. So we're not sure if it's him. It could have been another person. A lot of the commentaries think that it might be someone else, and that's likely. But let's read through this starting in verse 8. 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 8. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servants, saying, my camp will be in such and such a place. And we switch gears, and it's like in the movies where you pan and you see another person. And the man of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, beware, you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there. So he warned him. The king of Israel sent someone to the place in which the man of God told him, and thus he was warned, and he was watchful there, not just once or twice. So this was happening pretty frequently, as this story tells us. Therefore, the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing. So he calls his servants, and he said, well, will you show me which one of us is for the king of Israel? He thought there was a spy in his camp, because every time he goes to attack Israel, they're not there, because they're warned miraculously by God. So then, verse 12, one of his servants will said, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel. He tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom. So you better be careful what you say in your bedroom. That's the lesson there. Just kidding. Verse 13, he says, well, go and see where he is that I might send and get him. So now he's got a bounty on his head. And it was told him, saying, well, surely he is in Dothan. So he sent horses and chariots and a great army, and they came by night, and they surrounded the city. So imagine your little house, wherever it might be, and you wake up in the morning, and it's surrounded by horses and an army outside. That's what experienced. Verse 15, when the servant of the man of God arose, and he went out, and there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots, and his servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? Kind of like when we're in a spot and we don't know, have any idea how to go forward. What shall we do? What happens? Verse 16. Elisha answered, do not fear. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And that likens back to 1 John 4 and verse 4. That's one of my favorite scriptures. 1 John 4, 4. Elisha prays, Lord, open his eyes that he may see. Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Can you imagine if that you saw that? You prayed, and God showed you, surrounding you, were the horses and the chariots of fire. Never happened to me. Probably hasn't happened to you either. But God's with us. God is with us. And this is an exciting story. We may not see the chariots or the horses, but God is with us. I want to answer the question today, how can we know that God is with us? How can we know that God is with us? I've entitled the sermon, I Am With You. I am with you. I've got four ways we're going to go through, and I hope you'll find them helpful. I hope you'll find that is reflect maybe as we go through this. Think about your life. Think about what has happened through your journey, as we heard about. By the way, I wanted to really appreciate the words there when the ladies were offering to sing that. When I was beginning to prepare this message, I thought, wow, that'd be perfect. So I appreciate that coming together. But I think hopefully you'll find some thoughts that come to your mind. What's the first way that we can know God is with us? I'm going to make an acronym. You know I'm good for acronyms. So we got one today. I haven't done one in a while, but we got one today. W, it's words. Words. When we look at Scripture, you know, we look and we read the Bible, there, God directly tells His servants many times, I'm with you. I'm here to protect you. You can jot down Jacob, Genesis chapter 28. He's dreaming about the ladder. God tells him very plainly, I'm with you to keep you. We think of Joshua, Joshua chapter 1. God repeats a couple of times when he's trying to encourage him, I'm with you. We go to Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 8. Remember, Jeremiah was called to preach to the nations. And God said, well, I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you the strength. But I want to turn over to Matthew chapter 28 and verse 20. Because when Jesus Christ came to the earth, he was very emphatic too when he came and gave us the encouragement that we need. Matthew 28 and verse 20. This is as we come down to the end of the book, and we often will read it in relation to the directive of the church. Verse 19, but verse 20 is very encouraging. The last sentence, what's he say? I am with you always, even to the end of the age. I am with you always. And there's a very, very encouraging verse that we often will read at Passover, John 14, verse 18. Christ says, I will never leave you orphans. Never leave you orphans. Now, we don't have people that come up to us and say, like these servants, I'm with you. We don't have that. So how does God talk to us to tell us that He is with us? It's through our study. It's through our study. When we read, that's why we have so many stories recorded for us from those who have gone before us in faith. I want to go back to Judges chapter 6. And I want to pick up the story of Gideon. We just finished reading Judges in the Bible reading program. I like the book of Judges a lot. We were just talking on the way here that it's a big time span for the book of Judges. I didn't realize it covered almost 400 years approximately. And that really helps me understand why there's some of the comments that are recorded there. But let's go to Judges chapter 6 and we'll look at the story of Gideon. Let's look at verse 11 in Judges chapter 6. It says, now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. And I want to pause there a minute. What's going on in Israel at this time? Well, he's threshing wheat in a hiding place. Usually when you thresh wheat, it'd be like this stage here, and they'd throw it up, and it's very open because it's a joyous event. Well, he's hiding it because otherwise it'd be stolen. The Midianites would come in, and they would just pillage the land, and there'd be nothing left for them to eat. So he's doing this in secret. And it's interesting because this angel is capitalized, so we know it's Jesus Christ. Verse 12. The angel of the Lord appeared to him, and he says, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." I find that very sarcastic. Because here he's hiding, he's trying to make his food, and this guy comes and says, "Well, the Lord's with you." But it's encouraging, isn't it? Jesus Christ is very aware of where we are and what we're doing and what our life is experiencing. He says, well, verse 13, "Well, Lord, if you're with us, why has all this happened?" Valid question. Where are all the miracles which our fathers told us about? Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now he's forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. Verse 14, the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?" So twice, in just a couple of minutes, Gideon's told God's with him. God is with him. Now, the amazing part of Gideon is he didn't believe it, right? Because we have the fleece test. First, he not once, but twice. He says, "Well, God, I'm not into this," right? So he says, "Well, let me test you. If you can make the fleece or the dew on the fleece show up, then I'm with you," right? He didn't like that one. It wasn't enough for him. So the second time he says, "Well, put the dew on the ground and then I'm into this program." God is very patient with Gideon. Even though Gideon had been told directly that God was with him. So let me ask a question. Have you ever been like Gideon? Have you ever been told through reading of God's words, been strengthened, maybe through prayer, and yet you need the reminder? "I'm not totally with you here, God. Show me. Show me the fleece." Maybe you're puzzled about a situation and you prayed for an answer. And it hasn't quite been validated yet. Has that been you? I want to share a personal example on a lot of the points I'm going through today because I hope it will help you understand to look at circumstances in life and to find God in those events. So this example here under words goes back to a time when the boys were both young. Brian was sixth grade and Nathan was in fourth grade. And we'd gone to the feast in Florida. One of our favorite spots to go. It's nice. You can walk to services and within 10 minutes after services, you can be on the beach in your swimsuit. It is great. So we'd gone for about 10 days and towards the end of the feast, they had been exposed to chicken pox. I don't know how. I couldn't recall the exact circumstances, but they were exposed. And it was pretty concerning because many of you know chicken pox can last a long time. It can be a couple weeks. So here we'd missed 10 days for the feast for Brian, and now we have this potential problem. So we prayed. We asked God to intervene in the situation, direct us through it. And then Cynthia read Psalm 91 and verse 3. Let's go back there. Psalm 91 and verse 3. It was kind of fun preparing this message because we got to talk about a lot of stories from life. Figure out which one would fit. Psalm 91 and verse 3. Maybe this has happened to you. We read, "Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence." Now that seems like a pretty simple little verse, doesn't it? But you know what? It was several years later that the chicken pox came. It wasn't then. Several years later. And it worked out that the timing when we got it, never is a good time to get sick, they were able to be off school without any complication. So again, I guess share these because I know you have stories too. Where you've read something, maybe you've been praying and God drops a nugget in your mind to show you He's with you in life. He's with you in life. Reading God's Word, we knew exactly that God was with us. No doubt that He was going to guide us and help us go forward. Let's look at point number two. The letter I. You can probably already figure out where I'm going. Interactions. Interactions. Sometimes we may not believe that God has actually spoken to us through what we read. Again, we all struggle with being human, right? Doubt, uncertainty. And so sometimes God may show us through an interaction with someone else. What do I mean by that? I'm going to give you a couple references. We're not going to turn to these. I'm going to go back to another story. But jot down Genesis 21 and verse 22. Abimelech recognized that God was with Abraham, told him very directly. Similar situation in Genesis 26 and verse 28 regarding Isaac. 2 Chronicles 15, verse 1 and 2, Azariah told King Asa that God was with him. But let's go back to Gideon again. Let's go back to Gideon in Judges chapter 7. Interactions. Judges chapter 7. God had just gone through the sign of the fleece with Gideon. Now Gideon has mustered an army. Let's start, in verse 1 through 2, he musters the army. Then let's begin in verse 3. He says, "Therefore proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and afraid, let him turn and depart at once from Mount Gilead. And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained." So put yourself in Gideon's shoes. Here you are, you're trying to fight against your enemy, and God's given you the grace and favor, and you muster the army, but 22 of your 32, I'm out of here. Just like that. I'm out. I'm gone. See you later. How are you feeling if that happens to you? As a military leader, you're pretty concerned. She's got 10,000 left, right? Let's continue. Verse 4. The Lord said to Gideon, "Well, the people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. And it will be that of whom I say to you, this one shall go, that same shall go with you. And of whomever I say, this one shall not go, the same shall not go." So he brought them down to the water, and the people said to Gideon, "Everyone who laps from the water from his tongue as a dog, you shall set apart. Likewise, everyone who gets down on his knees to drink." And the number of those who lapped, putting their hand, was 300. And the rest of the people got down on their knees to drink. And the Lord said, "By 300, I will save you." So now, we go from 10,000 down to 300. That's a little scary if you're Gideon. But remember, he who's with us is greater than he who's with them, right? Let's go down to verse 9. "It happened on the same night that the Lord said, arise and go down to the camp, or down against the camp. I have delivered it into your hand." Again, reassurance for Gideon. "If you are afraid to go down to the camp with Purah, your servant, and you shall hear what they say. Afterward, your hands shall be strengthened to go down against the camp." So God knew his heart. God knew what's going on in his mind, and he still gives him an opportunity to be encouraged. So he went down. Verse 12, "The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as the locusts. And their camels were without number as the sand of the seashore in multitude." Now I find it quite striking that first they were able to get into the camp. And then they were able to get close enough they could hear them talking around the campfire. Let's continue. When Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. So you have to be pretty close to this group, right, to hear this conversation, unless God magnifies the conversation, which he could have done. We don't know. He said, well, I had a dream, and to my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent. It struck it so hard, or struck it so that it fell over and overturned, and the tent collapsed. And you can picture this, right? The armies, they're drinking, they got the fire going, and they're just telling stories, right? Because the next day they're thinking, well, I'm going to conquer Israel. Bravado going on. You can see this visual. What's he say? Well, his companion answers and said, this is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the man of Israel. And into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp. And they're probably laughing and taking another swig, right? And they're thinking, what's the possibility? What could go wrong, right? What could go wrong? And so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation that he worshipped, returned to the camp and said, arise, for the Lord has delivered the camp of Midian into your hand. An interaction. Not a direct one, but an interaction. God allowed that conversation to take place so that Gideon could know that God was with him. That's amazing. Has that happened to you? Have you had a conversation with maybe a colleague at work or maybe someone here? Maybe you're out at the grocery store and just someone, a comment just comes out of the, whoa. And it just strikes you because maybe God used that person as the messenger to strengthen you. Those things happen. I'm not saying that you have to look at every moment in life. That's not my point, but they do happen. Interactions like that occur. God allows those things for our benefit. So let me share another example. Last year, when we were attending the feast, Nathan had one class that had two tests. Had a midterm and a final. Guess which test came during the feast? Midterm. So we start the conversation. Nathan has a conversation with the professor very early on. Hey, can we work something out? Can I take it ahead of time? No. Can I log in during the feast through a secure portal? Because the professor was quite concerned that there would be cheating. Whatever. I mean, this is 2023. Let's get real, people. But anyway, no was the answer. Well, so we sent the excused absence form, you know, that's signed. And the teacher poked around on the website and saw there's a feast site in Cincinnati. I'd like for you to come back and take the test. Well, we were headed to Branson. There's no way I'm driving 10 hours back from Branson to take a test. So again, we prayed about it, asked God to intervene. And then we left for the feast. It wasn't going to happen, so we thought, well, God will help us through it. During the feast, another classmate got COVID. So now, it's not just Nathan. There's two. The professor was still unwilling to yield. Okay, that's fine. God's got it, right? So now we have another student. We felt at the time that it was God, again, allowing it so he would not be alone, because now another student has to take the same circumstances. A couple weeks after the feast, Nathan got an email from the professor praising him for his engagement in class, praising him for being a top student. And I'm very proud of our kids, but I don't share this story for that purpose. Because we felt at the time, and we still feel that way, that God was showing us through that interaction that he was with Nathan. with the family through those circumstances. To show us, drop a little nugget, I've got this. Now, we came to the end of the class and he took the final, and they did very well in the final, and the class went extremely well. But it took a big step of faith to realize you got one shot. And I see some faces out there that are pretty engaged that you understand what I'm talking about. To trust God to bring you through that, know that He is going to help you, but He dropped a nugget, and maybe He did for you, that He's with you. That He's with you through those circumstances. Because God will show us through an interaction, might be a conversation, might be just through whatever the circumstance may be, an interaction, that He is with you. Let's move on to our third point. It's the letter T. I'm a simple person. Things. Because we're physical, God must show us His involvement sometimes through physical things. He knows our needs. Often He knows, well, in advance He knows our needs. Something may break and God says, well, I'll help you with that one too. He's aware of our desires. And He shows us His great care through physical things. Let's go over to 2 Kings again. Story of Elisha. 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 1. 2 Kings 6 and verse 1. You probably know this story. 2 Kings 6 and in verse 1. The sons of the prophets said to Elisha, "See now, the place where we dwell with you is too small. Let us go to the Jordan and let everyone take a beam from there and let us make a place where we may dwell." So he said, "Well, we'll go. Let's do it. Please consent to go with your servants." And he said, "I'll go." So they went with him, and when they had come to the Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head fell into the water. And he cried and said, "Alas, master, it was borrowed." Now, if you've ever borrowed a tool, it's nice not to invest in them, but you want to take care of it because you want to return it and try to return in better shape than when you borrowed it. But what happens? It plunks into the water. Now, if you've ever gone swimming in a lake, the lake is usually pretty dark, depends on where you are. And where you dropped it might not be, in most cases, where it lands on the bottom. Because it kind of wiggles and does stuff as it goes to the, and then it falls in the, kind of like you drop something, even in a bathtub, it'll do the same thing. So the axe head sinks. And it's a borrowed tool. And what are you going to do? You've got to take it back. You have to replace it. Let's read. The man of God said, "Well, where'd it fall?" So he showed him. He cut off a stick. He threw it in and made the iron float. He said, "Pick it up for yourself." So he reached out his hand and took it. God made the axe float. Have you ever had an axe head float in your life? Have you lost something? Maybe it was an heirloom. Piece of jewelry. Keys. Wallet. No idea where it's gone. Retraced your steps. Can't find it. Take it to God. Has it ever floated? And just appeared? We've had it happen a few times in our life. Just floats. It appears. Maybe it's been a couple days and you can't find it. Something lost. Maybe it's a decision and you've wrestled with it for a week, 2 weeks, and just something pops in your mind. oh, that's a really good idea. God dropped that. That's an axe head floating. It's an axe head floating. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe you crossed paths with someone at maybe a month or a week before you needed, or maybe it was the day that you needed the encouragement, or you needed a certain conversation, and God allowed it, caused it to happen. That's an axe head. Just floats. God knows what we need. He knows the interactions that are appreciated. Maybe it's words at the right time. Again, I'm just, ideas are out there because you've probably experienced them if you recognize them. God intervenes in physical, with physical things that mean a lot to us. Again, let me share a personal story. Going back to 2006, we had visited Cynthia's parents at Zion National Park for their 40th anniversary. Fantastic time. At that particular period, they would escape to the park because it was during the winter months and the winter break. They could get out of Los Angeles and leave the hoopla behind. The park wasn't very crowded. It was just fantastic. And so that particular year, we went to Zion, and then we went to the Grand Canyon. I always joke it was my $3,000 hat, but we had a fantastic trip. We came in and out of Vegas. And so the night before, we drove back. We drove back that day, and we had an early flight the following morning. It was the last day of the year we were flying home. And we ate dinner, and then we decided to walk the strip for a little bit. That was a little more when Vegas was more family-friendly. It's changed quite a bit since then. And so we thought, let's walk the lights and see a little bit. We went to bed early. We got up the next day, and we took our flights. We flew home. We arrived home. We started unpacking, and the camera was not there. Wow, really? All the pictures, wonderful family time we'd shared, gone. And then I remembered. The night before, I'd placed the camera in the nightstand between the two beds. That doesn't seem like a big deal. But our plan as a family at that time was I'd get the luggage and Cynthia'd get the kids and she'd check the room. I didn't communicate, and we're good at not communicating, men. That I had taken the camera out of the backpack and placed it in the nightstand. And so when Cynthia went to check the room, it wasn't even on the radar. So what do we do? Well, the first thing we did was prayed. Help us. The circumstances, well beyond our control, right? We prayed as a family, and then I called the hotel. We're sorry, sir. That room's been occupied since you've left. We cannot enter the room. Oh. Say a quick prayer on the phone. A little more emphatic. Could you please reconsider? And go back. I'm certain it's there. She wasn't very responsive. We concluded the call. And I'm thinking, oh boy, we've lost it. It's gone. So we ate dinner. Started the bedtime routine, at that time with it, try to be positive as parents. About 2 hours go by and I call back. I thought, well, I'm going to check. Hotel clerk answers, well, I spoke with my manager and we decided to go check the room. I found your camera. It's secured in the safe behind the desk. But you have to pay for shipping. No problem. Right? No problem. It'll cost you $95. I don't care. But the next day is New Year's. We can't ship it to you until the 2nd. No problem. Thank you. We prayed as a family to thank God. Again, a physical thing. It's just a camera. The pictures, I understand, they're memories up here, but we forget. We forget. We got it about 2 days later. FedEx delivered it. And when we got it, battery worked. Pictures are all there. Things. God knows things mean a lot. Now, I'm not saying get wrapped up in them. Life's about all that. No, that's not true. But he knows there are things that are valuable to us. They mean a lot. And he intervened to prove that he was watching over our family. Let's go back to 2 Kings 4. I think we have some time. I want to show you that was just a little thing in our life. I hope you have a story. I'm sure you do. Let's go to 2 Kings 4. Because sometimes it's not, the camera and the pictures were not a necessity. But God does give things that are needed, as he did here. 2 Kings 4, let's start in verse 1. A certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. You know that your servant feared the Lord, and the creditor is coming to take my two sons to be slaves." Now, you may not think that's a big deal. Her husband, if you go back, was the man who hid the 100 servants from Jezebel. God knew their heart and their faithfulness. So what happens? Elisha said, "Well, what shall I do for you? Tell me. What do you have in the house?" "I have nothing in the house but a jar of oil." So he says, "Go and borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty ones, not just a few, or do not gather just a few. And when you've come in, shut the door behind you, you and your sons, and pour it into all the vessels and set aside the full ones." So she went from him, shut the door, her sons who brought the vessels to her, and she poured. It came to pass when the vessels were full that she said to her son, "Bring me another." He said, "Well, there are no more." She came and told the man of God, and he said, "Well, go sell the oil, pay your debt, and you and your sons live on the rest." God provides. God provides. He shows us he's with us through things. Now, he may wait, maybe you wait till the last minute. That's a lesson there too. That God has perfect timing, and we have to learn to trust those things, but he provides. He gives things. I won't read it, but you can jot it down. It's Psalm 37 and verse 25. It's a promise that's written through David that he does not abandon his children. God shows through things that he is with us. Let's go on to point number 4. H is healings. Healings. You know, health is one of life's greatest blessings. And when we are healthy, we should thank God. I think sometimes we forget when we are healthy to do that. And yet our bodies, they wear out. But God helps us. He is our only help when it comes to healing. You know, physical healing is always according to God's will. Always. And we have to learn to trust that he knows what is best. But healing strengthens our faith. Let's go back a few chapters in 2 Kings to 2 Kings chapter 20. 2 Kings chapter 20. 2 Kings 20, we'll read here about Hezekiah. 2 Kings 20 and in verse 1. God shows his involvement in our life through healing. In those days, Hezekiah was sick and near death. And Isaiah the prophet went to him and said, "Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live." I don't know why God did this. We look back at the story and we see Hezekiah made tremendous transformation of the nation, turning the Israelites back to the true worship. Other than this was perhaps a test for Hezekiah. "Remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart and have done what was good in your sight." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. Before Isaiah had gone out into the middle court, the word of the Lord came to him and said, "Return and tell Hezekiah, Thus says the Lord, the God of David, your father, I have heard your prayer. I've seen your tears. Surely I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up to the house of the Lord, and I will add to your days 15 years. I will deliver you and the city from the hand of the king of Assyria and defend this city for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David. So he was told, your time's over. And then he prayed. And Isaiah goes back, and God says, well, I'm going to give you 15 years. He healed him. Very dramatic event in the life of Hezekiah. God was so moved by his prayer that he healed. Hezekiah knew with absolute certainty that God was in his life. Absolute certainty. And yet, he still needed the validation. Verse 8. What's the sign that the Lord will heal me and that I shall go up to the house of the Lord on the third day? Still needed validation. I think we're all like that sometimes. Well, this is a sign that the Lord will do. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or backward 10 degrees? So Isaiah the prophet cried out to the Lord. He brought the shadow 10 degrees backward. So not just the intervention, but now God gives a physical sign, tremendous physical sign. I'm with you. I'm guiding your life. I'm with the nation. What's your story? What's your story? I bet you have more than one. What's your story? Each of us has one. Now you may say, well, why have I not been healed? And that's a very valid question. I've had health problems I'm dealing with for so long. Why hasn't God healed me? God's healing isn't always in the physical. Now. God's healing is not always in this life. What did he tell Paul? Let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. What did God tell Paul? 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. He said, my grace is sufficient for you. But I think more powerful part of this verse is the last statement. My strength, that is God's strength, is made perfect in weakness. God sometimes allows us to experience those things to show his power. Not just to us, but to maybe the others that are around us. To see how we're handling it. To see how we acknowledge God's involvement. And his power. God can heal in other ways besides the physical body. He heals mentally. He heals emotionally. When we accept that sacrifice of Christ, he definitely heals in the spiritual sense. God's Spirit heals our mind. And we look forward to what is going to come in the future. God has to heal before he can have the relationship with man. He's going to heal the land. He's going to offer his Spirit. And only after that, what happens? Then the tabernacle of God comes down and he dwells with man. Healing is a powerful way that God shows us he is with us. God shows us his involvement. He wants us to know, without a doubt, that he's watching over us. And he heals us to show us that involvement. You can jot down Psalm 34 and verse 15. It says, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. Verse 17, it says, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears. And verse 19, I actually have this as a plaque in my office. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Out of them all. Let's go to Psalm 55 and verse 22. Let's read that one. Psalm 55 and verse 22. Healings are a very powerful way that God shows us He is with us in life. Psalm 55 verse 22, it says, cast your burden on the Lord. He shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved. What did Christ do when he came to earth? Let's go to Matthew 20. So much of the life of Jesus Christ when he came in the flesh was about healing. He had compassion, intervened in so many ways. Matthew 20 and verse 29. It says here, as they went out of Jericho, a great multitude followed him. Two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard Jesus was passing by, they cried out, have mercy on us, O Lord. The multitude warned them that they should keep quiet. What's the likelihood that Christ would pass their way a second time? Pretty small. But they cried out all the more, have mercy on us, O Lord, the Son of David. And so Jesus stood still and he called them and he said, well, what do you want me to do for you? It's a question that was at their heart. And they said, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion. He touched their eyes and their eyes received sight and they followed him. This lesson here is much greater than a physical healing. This lesson looks forward to the time of the kingdom when the eyesight of mankind will be open to the truth and the power of God's plan and what he will do for mankind in allowing them to have a relationship. It's a tremendous story that we have of healing. God cares for mankind. He cares for each of us. And that's why healing is so powerful for us, that we understand God's involvement through those events. God had to miraculously reveal to Elisha's servant that he was with them. We know that Christ lives in us through the Spirit of God, and God still works in amazing ways. We may not see the horses or the chariots of fire, but through the words and through interactions and through things and through healings, God shows us that He is with us.